everyone. Welcome to Shrinks Talk Shop, a podcast where psychotherapists share their thoughts with you, and you don't have to be a therapist to listen and to learn. Shrinks Talk Shop is a product of On Good Authority, a provider of continuing education for mental health professionals. And I'm Barbara Alexander, the founder and president of On Good Authority, which is a website where mental health professionals can listen to interviews with psychotherapy experts and earn the continuing education credit they need to renew their licenses. I'm a clinical social worker, and I started this company in 1992. Since then, I've interviewed hundreds of psychotherapy experts, and now I'm going to share some of the best of those interviews with you. So here we go with Dr. Melissa Perrin, continuing last week's conversation. Here's where we left off.
With grief, it begins to lift, it begins to pass, which doesn't mean there aren't bad days, but the dysphoria should lift, it should decrease. And if it doesn't, that's when we have to move into the major depressive diagnosis.
We're throwing around the word major depression. I'm not sure where it fits.
Okay. Major depression, that's the biggie. That is the biggie. That's when an individual is hit by a truck, figuratively, right? And the individual is just not able to cope. So in the DSM-5 on page 160 and 161, we've got the set of symptoms. And so, for example, depressed mood most of the day, nearly every day. And this is either by the individual's report or observed by other people. Markedly, crucial word, markedly diminished interest or pleasure in all or almost all of the activities of the day. And clinically, one of the main things we listen for is not just dysphoria, loss of interest, but loss of interest in things that folks used to be interested in, right? In other words, if we see someone who's, you know, let's use the embroidering, right? And that's their passion. They can't wait to get home and work on their, you know, the embroidery. And they get home and they just walk past it, or they sit down next to it and can't even pick it up, or they pick it up and just can't do it, so they put it down. We're talking about marked disinterest. Insomnia or hypersomnia, the individual can't sleep or they're sleeping too much, that they're taking cat naps at lunch and then they come home and take a nap and then they get up and eat dinner and then they go back to bed. Psychomotor agitation or psychomotor retardation means that the individual is slowed down, and you can see this in a depressed individual. They're physically going to move slowly, or they're going to move quickly in order to get it done. It's like a burst of energy, I just have limited energy, so I'm going to do this really fast, and then I can sit back down, maybe take a nap. And here we've got feelings of worthlessness or excessive or inappropriate guilt. And I want you to think about rumination here, that they just think about this all the time, how bad they are, how bad things are, how things could be different, but they're not different. And followed by, and this is going to sound contradictory, but or paradoxical, but we're also going to have diminished ability to think or concentrate. There will be indecisiveness. And so if you think about the individual who used to be able to make decisions and all of a sudden they just can't, and it's not necessarily because they don't want to, but it's they don't have the energy to do it. Major depression is about loss of energy. It's about loss of energy. The reason that we use the word depressed is because we want people to think about, clinicians to think that, you know, this is about a decrease in ability. Now, a pet peeve of mine and other clinicians is that lay people use the word depression now as a descriptor. And we used to use the word depression as a diagnostic label. And so I'm often talking with my clients about, you know, when they say, I have depression, or I am depressed, and I'll say, you know, are there any other words that you can use to describe that? And when we talk about, and so I'm constantly teaching my clients, one phrase, the blues, I'm in a funk, I'm bummed out, I'm downhearted, I feel ennui, I have a heavy heart, I'm in a blue funk. Do you remember all those words we used to use to describe sadness or feeling down? A lot of times when people are feeling sadness or blue, or they're feeling like they're in a funk, they'll come in and to their doctor, their internist, and they'll say, I'm so depressed. And the doctor will say, what's going on? And they'll say, I'm depressed because, and then I'm going to use the old language, because I'm in a funk, or I've got the blues, or things aren't working out the way I want them to. And then internists prescribe Prozac. And when really the individual has just had a very, you know, a difficult time. You know, with major depression, we want the symptoms to have been present for 2 weeks or more. And we want it to represent a significant change from previous functioning. In other words, there is a before and an after. I've had clients talk to me about one day they were doing just fine, and the next day it was like a switch was thrown, and they just couldn't get out of bed. And I listened for a switch was thrown. You know, that there's a before and an after. There's a line that was crossed. And the reason that this is important is a lot of folks they're fatigued. They're not getting enough sleep. They're working too hard. They're working in jobs they don't like. They're frightened that they're going to lose their jobs. They're stressed financially. Those things can cause depressive symptoms, but may or may not be major depression. And again, it's back to the clinician to be able to listen for how much of this is stress-induced. And just because it's stress-induced does not mean it's not a diagnostic disorder. But it's important to listen for this. Is this a neurochemical depression? Is this a situational specific depression? And that's so important to figure out. When individuals come in and they report a switch was thrown, usually that's a neurochemical depression, that there's something that's happened with the neurochemistry overnight.
And no external, no precipitant.
Exactly. Exactly. And then in the situation specific, depressive downward spiral, then we do have something that has precipitated it. And over time, the individual will develop a depressive disorder. But that one is usually situation specific, and then the work needs to go along the lines of what can change, right? And if nothing can change, how then can we change the thinking? How can we reframe it so that the individual can find some hope?
Is there a category of situation specific depressive disorder, or is it just, or what is it?
Right. And well, there we're going to have unspecified depressive disorder. And then we're going to have unspecified mood disorder. And for both of those, there is a time to say, you know, due to layoffs or due to, you know, loss of a home or et cetera, et cetera. But it should be marked, you know, and we used to call, you know, depressive disorder not otherwise specified. We're no longer using not otherwise specified. We're saying unspecified depressive disorder. And then it's important to note, you know, that this is what's going on.
Yeah, let's go back to the depressive disorders.
So how many disorders are there? Four?
Major depressive disorder, chronic depressive, which is dysthymic, premenstrual dysphoric disorder. Oh, the one we're not talking about is substance abuse. Substance-induced depressive disorder. And then a third one is depressive disorder due to another medical condition. And of course, it's important to indicate the medical condition. So a substance-induced depressive disorder would be alcohol is a depressant. Pot is often a depressant, cannabis. And if an individual begins to report anxiety or depression, and it happens to correlate with an increase in the use of those two substances, then it would be a depressive disorder, substance-induced depressive disorder. Again, we're looking at a very short frame of time, 2 weeks, that the individual feels that way.
That's not a very long time.
It's not a very long time. Well, that's the minimum, of course. And most clinicians will, they'll want to hear a longer period of time unless the individual is, but again, the word major in front of depressive disorder tells us these symptoms have to be significant, you know, highlighting, underlining that one, putting it in italics, major means significant distress. A depressive disorder without the word major in front of it is going to be less significant. But again, in order for it to be a disorder, there has to be a significant distress, significant. And with major, it's got to be major significant disorder or distress. And the other thing to think about with depression is, for example, an individual who has been using crack cocaine in a habitual way, when they are not able to use crack cocaine, they will spiral down into an incredible level of depression, and that will last 72 hours, 96 hours as part of the withdrawal, because crack cocaine is all about euphoria and it's all about the dopaminergic system, the engine, you know, running very, very hot. And when we take crack cocaine out of an individual system, they are depressed. I mean, life is abysmal. again, for those 72 to 96 hours. And then they're left with a residual sense of depression, and they have depressive symptoms. That individual could also be diagnosed with substance-induced depressive disorder.
And there's a danger of suicide in that time, too, I bet.
Yes, there is. Yes, there is. Very difficult to ride that out. Very important to tell youngsters that when they take crack cocaine, it'll be fun for a moment, but then it's very sad after that. Coming down is a bad thing.
We're in the middle of an interview with Melissa Perrin, and I'm Barbara Alexander from Shrinks Talk Shop, continuing our conversation.
Have we missed any of the depressive disorders?
No, we've not. We can talk about the specifiers, and those would be what you would expect, of course. Severity is going to be mild, moderate, or severe. But then when it gets more significant, that'll be with psychotic features, because with major depressive disorder, we do have, you know, it can move over into the realm of having psychotic features. It can also move into the significant realm of having catatonia, in which the individual is not able to move. They feel so separated from their bodies, and the body literally cannot move. And then the other core specifiers would be in partial remission, full remission, and then, of course, the ever nebulous unspecified. And I just really encourage people, clinicians, to stay away from unspecified unless they truly, they're seeing symptoms, but they just have no way of categorizing those symptoms. But unspecified should be rarely used, and the real fear is that it's going to be used an awful lot. And then here are some of the important part terms for the diagnostic criteria. They want us to specify, and this is great, does the individual have a depressive disorder with anxious distress? And I listen to those two words together, anxious distress, right? And when we're talking about symptoms, we're talking about people in distress. With anxious distress, I want you to think about someone who the brow is furrowed, the hands are, you know, they're wringing, the person is kind of can't quite sit still. Anxious distress means they're just not quite bouncing, but the anxiety is palpable. The clinician should feel it. With mixed features means, of course, anxiety, anger, and sadness, right? With depression, we're talking about sadness. Melancholic features, melancholia is when the individual just feels sad about everything, sad, hopeless. The use of the word dysphoria is melancholic. And then atypical features means that, and this is often how male depression is categorized, that male depression with atypical features, because most features are, of course, female. And then with mood congruent psychotic features, the individual will be hallucinating, you know, hearing voices that say, it's just never going to get any better, it's always going to be this bad. And then mood incongruent psychotic features will be to have a happy, you know, strident, you know, we've got to conquer the world voice, and the individual is just so overwhelmed because they can't even, you know, get up and go to work. And here's this hallucination that says we've got to do this, which drives the person farther and farther into their mood state. And then peripartum onset, peri means before or during, right? And so if you think about menopause, postmenopause, and perimenopause, the new diagnostic category in the medical world, peripartum onset means the woman is still pregnant, has not given birth yet, but she's beginning to feel depressive. And so peripartum onset, that's kind of new. And it's not a concept that clinicians have been talking about. We've all been very concerned about postpartum depression, but peripartum is so important. And women are likely to underreport that because they know or believe that they're supposed to be excited about their pregnancy. And there's real stigma if they're not excited about their pregnancy. And we're really wanting clinicians to ask about that with a pregnant woman and kind of listen for depressive states that the woman might not want to admit to. But when given permission and non-judgment, peripartum onset is so crucial. And then, of course, there's seasonal pattern, right? Seasonal affective disorder, in which we note that when there's less light or cloudy days, you know, that an individual, their mood is affected by the weather. And by the way, there are also folks who whose moods are affected by summer, by sunlight and warm temperatures. They just feel absolutely overwhelmed and can't get out of bed because of that season. So those are the specifiers.
So as a clinician wanting to understand the whole depressive disorders in the DSM-5, what would be the best way to work on this, to learn this? Obviously, I'm hoping that this interview will be a way that people can find a way in, and the presentations that you give. But you're sitting with the book. What's the best way to learn about this?
I think the best way is, and this is so pedantic, but read every word and to think in extremes. I just really encourage people to think in extremes. If it is a disorder, it's because the individual is in distress. That's more than having a bad day or a bad month. It's more than feeling sluggish or eating too much food. If the person isn't describing distress, I really encourage clinicians to listen to stressors. You know, what are the stressors? What's happening in the individual's life? This might not be a disorder. It might be that this individual, you know, isn't getting enough sleep because they're on their computer until 1 o'clock in the morning looking at iwastesomuchtime.com, you know, and so they're not getting adequate sleep. Or this could be an individual who is feeling lonely and that, you know, that they don't have enough friends because friends have moved away or they're in a new place that they're living. That's not depression. That's how do we help connect you with other people? So I would encourage clinicians to read the DSM-5, buy the DSM-5, and really read it, especially those symptoms, those disorders that the individual comes into contact with most of the time in their practice or in their work, and be very clear that the symptoms must, I mean, even the language in the DSM-5 says, this is more than a bad couple of days. This has to be, the individual is stopped by it, you know, that they've done what they can. And this is, you know, coming back to our earlier interview in which we talked about what does extreme mean, you know, what makes a disorder. Folks will do everything they can to manage their symptoms before they'll walk through the door of a clinic or a clinician's office. No one plans for a crisis. No one says, I think I'll go check in with a psychologist because I haven't ever met one before. It's always, I've done everything I know how to do. I hoped it was going to get better. I took my vitamins. I tried to exercise. I broke up with the boyfriend, and I'm still feeling this horrible way. And when folks walk through the door, that is an indicator that they're in great distress. But it's also important, it's on us, the clinicians, to be very familiar with the different types of disorders under the umbrella of the big labels.
Dr. Perrin, another terrific summary and parsing of quite a complicated document.
Oh, thank you.
And thank you so much. It's just great.
I've enjoyed it a great deal. It's wonderful to talk with you.
Melissa Perrin may be contacted at 847-864-8874 or email cydperrin@aol.com.
And by the way, I'd love to hear your thoughts and comments about this program and any ideas you might have for future programs. My email address is info@ongoodauthority.com. So don't miss it. And if you or someone you know would like to earn continuing education credit for listening to these podcasts, go to www.ongoodauthority.com for complete information. So until next time, this is Barbara Alexander, thanking you for listening.